Hello, and welcome to The Leap of Faith. Well, the former British Prime Minister, Arthur Balfour, is remembered chiefly for two things. Firstly, after his uncle, Lord Robert Cecil, gave him his first cabinet job, the phrase "Bob's your uncle" was coined as a byword for fast-tracking in career advancement. But the thing that we'll be focusing on this evening is the so-called Balfour Declaration, which was signed a century ago this week. It was a public statement issued by the then British Foreign Secretary during World War I, announcing support for the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine, then a Turkish Ottoman region with a minority Jewish population, but soon to become a British protectorate. Over the next 25 minutes, we'll explore just one aspect of this very detailed topic. What we'll not attempt or achieve is a resolution or conclusion to the subject that continues to confound the best political, religious, and diplomatic brains. What we hope we will do is leave you with a clearer understanding of the origins of the current impasse and the reason why two polar opposite political positions can both reasonably argue that they have justice and history on their side. Tonight we have two contributors to the programme, and due to very full schedules for both of them that precluded bringing them to the same studio at the same time, we'll present their perspective on the historic document as individual conversations and not as a debate. We asked our guests not to solve the Middle East problem tonight, but explain its possible origins. Tonight's conversations are not the last word on this topic, and it's one we'll return to many times in the future. So tonight, we'll focus on the events of 1917, rather than try to attempt to reconcile the conflicts of more recent times. So what about the letter sent to Lord Rothschild in 1917? It read,
Foreign Office, November the 2nd, 1917. Dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you, on behalf of His Majesty's Government, the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet. His Majesty's Government view with favour the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavours to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. Yours, Arthur James Balfour.
Shortly, we'll hear from Dr. Yasser Alashkar. He's an adjunct assistant professor at the International Peace Studies Programme at Trinity College Dublin. Born in Gaza, he completed a PhD in Civil Society and the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict at Trinity College. Before that, I'm joined in the studio by writer and broadcaster Yankley Fackler, a founding member of the Jewish Historical Society of Ireland, for a look initially at the historic landscape that surrounded Balfour's declaration. Yankley, do you see the declaration as a reason for celebration after 100 years?
This is absolutely a celebration. The Balfour Declaration was the middle of a three-act play which started with the first Zionist Congress in 1897 with Theodor Herzl, ended with the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948, and the middle act, the middle event, and the event that actually started the clock ticking towards Jewish independence in Israel was the Balfour Declaration 100 years ago.
What was the environment at the time, 1917? A war was taking place.
This was the war. Turkey had joined Germany. At first, Britain thought Turkey might remain neutral or even join the Allies, but they didn't. They joined Germany. So therefore, Britain is at war with Turkey. And that, of course, the whole Gallipoli fiasco was about Britain versus Turkey. And in a sense, the Palestine campaign of 1917 and 1918 is a rerun of Gallipoli in the Palestine arena rather than in the Gallipoli arena. So technically, the Ottoman Empire still runs Palestine and is in charge of Palestine and has chucked out a lot of Jews to Egypt because they refused to join the Turkish army. I'm talking about Russian-born Jews who'd come to live in Palestine, and they were kicked out at the beginning of the war, and they ended up in Egypt. And Britain has an expeditionary force, eventually led by General Allenby. He would be the most famous general. And that force twice unsuccessfully tries to capture Gaza. It's strange how Gaza sort of is in the picture from that early age. And eventually, on the 31st of October, 1917, the Australian Light Horse defeats the Turks in Beersheba. It is actually, in military history, the last great cavalry charge. Now, this signals the beginning of the end of the Ottoman grasp in Palestine, because within a couple of months, by December, Allenby has reached Jerusalem. He liberates Jerusalem. And basically, for the next few months, he's mopping up in that arena. So technically, this is still the Ottoman Empire. And Britain is in a war and is fighting the Ottoman Empire and is capturing territory in Palestine. This, of course, dovetails with the fact that on the 2nd of November, the Balfour Declaration said Britain views with, intends to help the Jews come home and create their homeland in Palestine, which on that date wasn't yet British.
And yet, this is the one word that is contentious in this whole thing, is that you say people coming home and a homeland. The distance between a time when it was a Jewish homeland originally and now 1917 is quite a distance.
Yes, but anyone who knows anything about Jewish history would know that from the last Jewish Commonwealth, which was destroyed by the Romans in the year 70, until 1917, the entire Jewish community in the world, no matter where they were, their focus was one, and that focus was returning to Jerusalem. So although Zionism as a political movement only starts in 1896, 1897, there is a latent Zionism in every Jew, because if you remain a Jew, then you say your prayers. And if you say your prayers are all about coming back to Zion. Also, there was a continuous presence of Jews in the Holy Land, not always very big, but there was never a time when they weren't there. So yes, that's why I use the term coming home, because Zionism was a movement to bring the Jews back home to where they had started, especially in light of the pogroms and the anti-Semitism and the persecution that was going on in Europe in the years to the end of the 19th century.
What was referred to as the Jewish problem? What was it that Britain might have been trying to solve at that particular point?
It was the fact that the Jews didn't have their own homeland, wanted one, needed one existentially. What was going on in Russia was absolutely terrible. And of course, we know that 3 million Jews moved to America over a 20, 30-year period. They didn't move for their health. They moved because they were being persecuted. So if the Enlightenment and the enlightened era of the 19th century seemed as if anti-Semitism should be something of the past, suddenly Herzl realized that anti-Semitism was alive and well in the very heart of enlightened Europe. It was alive and well in France, in Germany, and throughout Europe. And it was at this point where he says to himself, it is no longer enough for the Jews to be protected by host nations. The only solution to anti-Semitism is for the Jews to have their own home. And of course, where should that home be? Where it always was.
When you look at what Balfour wrote in his letter to Lord Rothschild, there was an understanding, if you read it now and you look at the English that's in there, that there would be a joint responsibility in this place.
Not really. I think that's a misreading of the Balfour Declaration. And if you look at the 10-month period during which a statement of this kind was being mulled and crafted and argued over in London and then later in Washington, because what most people don't know is the American angle here. Britain was only prepared to make the Balfour Declaration if President Woodrow Wilson gave his agreement.
But even one British cabinet member, Montague, said that this would result in conflict.
Okay.
He was Jewish.
Yes, he was Jewish, and he led the he was an anti-Zionist, which is a strange concept, but the minority of British Jews, there were anti-Zionist Jews, quite influential ones in Britain.
He was right, though. It did result in conflict.
Okay, but I think that that is not specifically to do with the wording of the Balfour Declaration. The wording, like I say, was crafted in such a way. Let me just jump forward a couple, 2 or 3 years, and maybe that will help explain. When Balfour and Lloyd George, the two main architects of the wording of the Balfour Declaration, were asked in subsequent years, what did you mean with the Balfour Declaration? They unequivocally said, well, of course we meant a state. Of course we meant creating a Jewish state.
But they didn't use the word.
No, they didn't use the word. Absolutely not. But this was their intention. And once the mechanism for the British Mandate in Palestine was put in place, the concept was, get prepared for a state. In other words, I don't think anyone believed that the British Mandate would last for centuries. It was a mandate. That even the word mandate means look after the place and in the meantime build government-like structures. Now, the second half, which is the contentious part of the Balfour Declaration, doesn't talk about two states. It talks about freedom of religion and rights within the Jewish homeland that's going to be created. And if you look today at the State of Israel, nowhere in the Middle East does any Christian or Muslim have more rights, more civil rights, than in Israel. You've got Muslim judges. We have a president who, unfortunately, is in
prison. Somebody who has been displaced from what they consider to be their home would argue very strongly with what
okay.
you just said.
But that this is a totally different argument because it's a totally different subject, and this is about the war that happened 30 years later. This is not about 1917.
So we're sticking in this program back to what was happening 100 years ago and the document that has come from it. When you look back at it now and with the hindsight of it as an historian, was it a flawed document?
I don't think I would call it a flawed document. I would say it was probably the best that the Zionists could have hoped for in the circumstances. It was a very opportune statement because it came at a time when, in fact, as we discussed earlier, Britain was now becoming the power that was in charge of Palestine. 2 years after the document, with a stroke of the pen, Churchill gave away 75% of that territory and created Jordan. So that's another aspect of the Balfour Declaration and Palestine that people don't remember. So for what it was, it gave the Jews at last a roadmap. It said, come back, build the place, and create a homeland here in Palestine. I don't think it could have been more explicit, but it was understood by everybody, by the British, even though on the ground, the British then started rowing back. Not the cabinet, but the people out there did a terrible job because they were being British. Divide and rule and very perfidious. And in the end, of course, just jumping 30 years forward, Britain was forced to give it up. They couldn't hang on to it anymore. They left a mess, which is what they have done often in other places, not too far from here. But the momentum that the Balfour Declaration gave to a movement that had started 20 years earlier, that galvanized Jews around the world, this was, like I say, the beginning of the countdown.
Yankee Fackler, thank you. Well, Dr. Yasser Alashkar is an adjunct assistant professor in the International Peace Studies program at Trinity College Dublin. And earlier today, I spoke to him in Trinity College and began our conversation by asking him, as a man born in Gaza and having completed a PhD on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, what is his take on the Balfour Declaration?
The Balfour Declaration is very important from the perspective of not only Palestine and the situation in Palestine, but also the Middle Eastern context. We have to remember that at that time when the Balfour Declaration was issued, Palestine and the rest of the Middle East came under a colonial rule. And the two colonial powers at that time were France and Britain. And they divided the territories of the Middle East between themselves. Palestine, Jordan, Iraq, and Egypt, long before, have come under British rule. France took over what we know now, the land of Lebanon and Syria. Now, in terms of the Balfour Declaration, in 1917, part of that colonial context, Britain committed itself to the creation of the State of Israel in the land of Palestine. And the declaration was very clear in saying that Britain would use its best endeavors in order to establish a Jewish state in the Middle East and mainly in the land of Palestine. Why is that important to understand? Is because this wasn't a simple declaration. That was a policy that was adopted by the British government in a very systematic way in order to facilitate the creation of a Jewish state.
What problem were they solving?
I think there are two explanations which are important here in terms of British policy and the Balfour Declaration. One is Britain and other European powers were dealing with the so-called at that time the Jewish problem in Europe. That was a major calculation for those colonial powers. There was a large Jewish community living in Europe, different places in Europe, facing persecution and facing racism and so on. And basically at that time, the United Kingdom was trying to find a solution to the Jewish problem in Europe. So in my perspective, what I think from my own perspective is Britain, by committing itself to the creation of the State of Israel in Palestine through the Balfour Declaration, was trying to get rid of the Jewish problem in Europe, okay, and locate it somewhere else, that is Palestine, that is non-European. So it was a European power dealing with a European problem at the expense of another non-European nation, that is the Palestinians. So that's the first calculation we need to take into account in terms of what the Balfour Declaration was trying to establish or solve. The second, it was colonial. Britain wanted to create a state in the region that would be completely loyal to Britain and to colonial powers of that time. And one of the British leaders, it's interesting if you look back at history, described that, you know, in the context of a Jewish state that would be in the Middle East and would be similar to a Jewish Ulster, okay, in the context of Ireland, a loyal Jewish Ulster that would basically serve the interests, the colonial interests of Britain and France in the region, mainly the protecting the access to the Suez Canal and also their interests in energy resources and oil resources in the Middle East. So there was another dimension which needs to be taken into account, which was anti-Semitism. I mean, there are critical perspectives there, which suggest clearly now that one of the major motivations for Balfour and the British government at that time to issue the Balfour Declaration was anti-Semitism. They didn't like the Jewish people. They wanted to send them out of Europe. And that was a major factor in that process. And we need to remember that. So if you look at it from the outside, what you can see is a clear British support for the creation of Israel, which means a clear British support for Zionism, the Jewish movement that wanted to colonize the land of Palestine with British support.
In Britain at the time, was there anybody in government who actually had a criticism of the Balfour Declaration?
That's a good question, because Edwin Montagu, who was a member of the British cabinet at that time, and he was the only Jewish cabinet member in the British government when the Balfour Declaration was issued. And he was very critical of the Balfour Declaration as a declaration by the British government and as a policy. And he opposed the declaration for two reasons. One, that this would create a conflict between Jewish people and another nation, that is the Palestinians, in the land of Palestine. And it would simply remove the conflict from Europe and send it somewhere else, that is Palestine. So it would become a problem between Jewish and Christian and Muslim people in the land of Palestine. So that was one of the reasons why he opposed the declaration. The second reason was that he believed the solution for the Jewish problem isn't outside of Europe. It's in Europe, and it has to be based on equal rights for Jewish people. So in other words, he was supporting the idea of integration of Jewish people within European society, rather than having them sent over to Palestine to establish a state there through colonialism and violence.
And at any point, were they operating with a political naivety, or was there a plan that this Jewish population would manage and control the Christians and Muslims that were already living there?
That's a good question, because the Balfour Declaration, what it said clearly was, The declaration and the commitment to a Jewish state in the land of Palestine would not affect the religious and civil rights of non-Jewish communities living in the land of Palestine. So when you look at that, what you can take out of it is it was clear that the Palestinian community who were living there, their identity was not recognized. They were not named as Palestinians in terms of their identity. They were described as non-Jewish communities. So the denial of Palestinian identity was very clear through the declaration. And secondly, the declaration did not refer and did not acknowledge the Palestinian political rights. It spoke about religious and civil rights. It did not make a reference at all or acknowledge at all Palestinian political rights, meaning the right of Palestinians to their own state and their independence from colonial rule. Palestine also at that time was mixed in terms of the population. About 20% of the population who were Christian and the rest were Muslims in general. So it was mixed. There is a conflict, and Britain has created this conflict through the Balfour Declaration. And B, what is needed is partition. A member of the committee made a reference to Ireland, if you look at the history and the record, by saying that this is the same problem as in Ireland, which is two national groups who are living in this land and cannot coexist in peace. Right. So what is needed is partition. So at that time, there was a recommendation that the Jewish immigration be stopped. And again, that was a short term measure. OK, and that does not take away from the fact that Britain, in a systematic way, had an active policy of welcoming Jewish immigration in Palestine. And more importantly as well, allowing British groups to create government institutions in Palestine, to create the foundation of the state, and preventing the Palestinians from doing that, but allowing Jewish groups to do it. And secondly, Britain also actively endorsed the creation of Jewish militias and paramilitaries in the land of Palestine in order to facilitate the creation of the State of Israel. And those groups committed violence and committed crimes. And those are well documented and recognized by international organizations, including the UN, for example.
And we have the situation today where we have people able to claim crimes and atrocities on both sides.
Yes, I mean, I'm not here justifying violence. Violence is not acceptable. However, one of the things that we need to take into account, especially for people who are working in academia and journalism and media and so on, is the context of the violence, where the violence has come from, where it has emerged from. This is really the bit that is, or the element that is missing in the conversation. The major context was colonialism, and still is colonialism. It was also this displacement of a group of people from their land and the denial of their national and political rights, as I said. And the context was also a European power deciding the future of a non-European people and a non-European territory, that was Palestine and the Palestinians. So I think, yes, acts of violence that have been committed as well by the Palestinian people, but that also has a context, which is resistance to the Israeli occupation and resistance also to colonial rule, and also the oppression that people have suffered over the last 100 years since the Balfour Declaration. This is not to justify violence, but this is to put it into context in order to find a solution for it.
Dr. Yasser Elashker, thank you. So there you have it. We are aware that, like all good radio, we hope the end of our conversation this evening may be just the start of yours. I'm sure you'll draw your own conclusions from the contrasting points of views expressed. Indeed, you may have noticed among the differences expressed tonight the shared views by both contributors that the subsequent handling of the Middle East events after Balfour has made things a whole lot worse. You can share your views on the topic by emailing us, faith@rte.ie. We'll try to include some of your views in future programmes when, as is inevitable, the Leap of Faith returns to that divided place so many call their holy land. We won't be with you next week, but we will return at the same time on the 17th of November. From all of us here tonight, good night.